Hi, everybody. This is Tom Salemi of Device Talks. Welcome to the Abbott Talks podcast. Over the past few years, the world has come to recognize Abbott as a company dedicated to helping people live happier and healthier lives. In this podcast series, we'll talk with the healthcare leaders, the executives, and the engineers who are working every day to develop new technologies to help people live their best lives. I know you'll enjoy this episode of the Abbott Talks podcast. Hey everyone, this is Tom Salemi of Device Talks. Welcome to this episode of Abbott Talks. Our guest today is Sandra Lesenfant. She is the Senior Vice President of Structural Heart at Abbott. Structural Heart is a fascinating space. It's an area where Sandra has spent most of her career. We'll follow that career, including a quick detour into another space within medtech, and also, of course, talk about how she found her way into the industry and what the future holds for Abbott's Structural Heart Program. Before we begin this episode, I want to bring in our sponsor, Confluent Medical. I'm here with Tom Ditter. He's Senior Director of Product Development at Confluent Medical. Tom, Confluent's made quite a bit of noise in the medical device space this year, specifically surrounding Nitinol, which has been just really an exciting topic of the year and of the past couple of years. Before the company was Confluent, it was known as NDC, which stands for Nitinol Devices and Components. Can you give us a quick overview of how Confluent got to where it is today and how your history is connected to NDC and to Nitinol?
Yes, you know, before it was called Nitinol Devices and Components, it was actually known as Nitinol Development Corporation. And the philosophy of the founders was to understand the fundamental material science behind Nitinol and to use that to design and process components made from Nitinol. Now, Confluent continues its legacy today throughout its capabilities. It focuses on the material science of not just Nitinol, but also polymers and textiles as well.
That's really interesting. And as a contract manufacturer, your job is to assist OEMs in taking a design from prototype to production. Can you give us some examples of how Confluent accomplished this recently? A few cases you've worked on. I know you have to probably be sparse on details, but what are some of the things you've been working on?
Confluent is fully integrated. It has the capability to take a product from prototyping to development, optimization, and full-scale manufacturing. We recently just worked with an OEM on a novel neurovascular stent. We assisted them initial design iterations, process development, to full-blown manufacturing.
Tom, Confluent Medical is a contract manufacturer, which means you assist OEMs in taking a design from prototype to production. Can you give us an example of how Confluent has recently accomplished this?
Yes, as you mentioned, Confluent is fully integrated. We do have the capability to take a product from initial prototyping to full-scale manufacturing. We recently accomplished this with a OEM that was working on a novel neurovascular stent. We worked with them on the initial design iterations, took it to process, development, optimization, and finally to full-scale manufacturing.
All right, we'll hear more from Confluent a little later in the podcast. If you'd like to find out more right now, you can go to ConfluentMedical.com or, interestingly enough, Nitinol.com. Very cool URL. Well, Sandra Lesenfant, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Excited to learn about Abbott's structural heart business, which you're leading. But all of these conversations start the same way because we want to understand who we're talking to as well as what they're doing. So, Sandra, how did you find your way into the medical device industry? What drew you here?
Yeah, so I am a biomedical engineer, and I spent 10 years in the healthcare imaging space in ultrasound, then about 15 years in the medical devices field, primarily in cardiovascular. And and right now I'm in charge of the structural heart business at Abbott. So I joined Abbott last November, and I am in charge of the structural heart business since January.
That's fantastic. I'm sure you could have been any kind of engineer. What led you to be a biomedical engineer? What did you find appealing about that?
A biomedical engineer, I think it's more personal. I had my mom, she was suffering from a heart cardiac condition. And I was just fascinated by understanding what would be the some solutions to help her. And I loved science, so that was just the right fit for me. And in fact, I've been in cardiovascular for the last 15 years. So this is I've been following my path and building it over time.
That's amazing. So and you started off in imaging, you said. Yeah. So what that's a sort of an interesting space to start. I think particularly for a biomedical engineer, but maybe I'm misreading it. I just see that it always is more of a digital sort of technology as opposed to a piece of plastic and a piece of metal and a strip of nitinol. What drew you to the imaging space, and what did you like about imaging?
So imaging, like I am a biomedical engineer and I have a major in computer science. And in fact, when I started working, I developed an algorithm for Siemens at that time to calculate the ejection fraction in 3D. And that's how everything started, just by chance, because I found this internship. And then I stayed in the imaging space in ultrasound. But after 10 years, I just wanted to do something for which I could be maybe closer to the patients, be in a space or play in an arena for which I can have maybe a different kind of impact, you know, for which I can, instead of diagnosing like diseases and on patients, it's more about treatment this time and offering some new therapies.
So did that lead to the move to EV3? Was that sort of your first move into?
That's correct. This is how I joined EV3. So that was a big move for me at that time, and probably one of the best decisions of my life.
I bet. So I'm trying to remember what EV3 would have been in 2010. It was a sizable company at that point, correct? I've kind of got all my years jumbled, but yeah. It wasn't a startup by any means.
It was a sizable company, and this is when Covidien announced the acquisition of EV3, so it was in 2010.
Okay. Oh, so right around the same time.
Exactly. That's so, exactly right.
And you, I see, spent the time in Covidien's Reynolds Innovation Program, August 2013 to October 2014. So you were there right in the middle of all that went on with the trial that came out in January 2014, correct?
That's correct. Yeah. That ended up to be a short experience for me.
We just had Jason Weidman at one of our conferences, and he retold the whole story. So it turns out to be a great medtech story with a happy ending, thank goodness.
Yeah, many learnings from this story for sure.
Yeah. So what is it that drew you to the structural heart space? I find it fascinating. What's the appeal of structural heart for you?
I mean, for me, structural heart, clearly this is one of the fields for which within the cardiovascular space, this is the most innovation-driven segment. This is a relatively new field as well, if you compare it to any other cardiovascular medical devices segments. And I really enjoy the way how we partner with physicians. I found a scientific community who's very, very passionate about advancing, you know, the structural heart field, helping and partnering with industry so that we can not only drive innovation, but also drive clinical research and help understanding how we can offer the best possible treatment options.
So in the context of Abbott's structural heart program, what percentage of structural heart is surgical, open heart, sort of get in there with your hands, surgical, and what part of it is interventional? I think we all think about the interventional, the valves, the way they're placed, but from my understanding, a very big part of this is still a surgeon opening up the chest and getting inside the chest cavity.
Yeah, that's right. Then it depends, you know, on the regions and the countries in the world. So some countries are more advanced than others as it comes to get access to some minimally invasive transcatheter technologies, and that's pretty much all over the place. But cardiac surgery, it's still a big chunk of our business.
Interesting. And just going back to your LinkedIn profile for a moment, I noticed you were at Structural Heart at Medtronic. You moved to Philips for hospital patient monitoring. And then you were at Penumbra, where I actually met you the first time. You were a speaker at our Device Talks West in 2022. Thank you very much for doing that. What led you sort of away from Structural Heart? And let's then revisit how you, or let's find out how you found your way back.
Yeah, I have to admit that I was not necessary. I felt great being part of Structural Heart, and this is when I really fell in love with this field. That was when I got for the first time the opportunity to lead this business. I think that I simply made a personal decision to leave a company and develop a new, be exposed to a new area, do something different. But when I got Abbott, who reached out to me and offered me with the opportunity to come back, I have to admit that I didn't have to think twice.
So what is what is unique about the structural heart space? You've had experiences in other medical device areas. Clearly, this is the one that sort of that is pulling at your, no pun intended, heartstrings. What is it about the qualities of the structural heart space that you really enjoy?
Yeah, what I enjoy, as I said, the one thing I enjoy the most, it's the way how innovation driven is structural heart. There is still so much work to be done. It's relatively new. As I said, it's quite remarkable if you think about how fast this space and this market has grown over the last 15 years. And especially in one particular segment, which is the transcatheter aortic valve replacement space. But beyond that, there is still so much to be done. I mean, we have four different valves in one heart, and the one which is the one therapy which is the most advanced from a transcatheter perspective is the aortic segment, but there is still a lot to be done in mitral, I mean, to treat mitral or tricuspid regurgitation, a lot to be done as well in as it comes to treat some of the structural heart defects. That's also another piece of this field. And also congenital heart disease. It's an important, very important, close to my heart segment, which I've been very passionate about and committed to make sure that we will keep prioritizing some investments from an innovation perspective, because these patients, they really need to get access to new technologies, new solutions. So there is a lot going on out there. And even in TAVI, in transcatheter aortic valve interventions, I mean, there are still some pretty big unmet needs, and we still have a big role to play.
What are the technical things that you see driving some of the innovation in the space, or maybe not just technical, but are there new materials that are being made available that are advancing the space? Are there surgeons coming up with new concepts that industry is pursuing? What are some of the ingredients of this this surge in structural heart innovation?
So I think it's a mix of multiple different things. So first of all, this is relatively new, as I said, and which means that we've got to learn a lot over the last few years from the very first, you know, technologies which were introduced a few years ago. And we've got to understand these devices' limitations. We've got to better also understand some of the gaps, unmet needs. And we've been doing, I think, this in partnership with the interventional cardiology community, but also the cardiac surgery community, so that we can keep, you know, challenging ourselves and keep driving the innovation so that we can offer at the very end, the ultimate goal is to be able to offer the best possible therapies to help patients, you know, living longer lives or better lives.
What percentage of the patients who are, one of the things that fascinated me about the structural heart space is just the amount of people who need the care, who aren't getting the care. I mean, the percentages are very small, right? The percentage of people whose hearts are failing and who qualify for intervention. Talk a bit about the patient population, if you would.
Yeah, so there are multiple, I would say, patient populations depending on the disease. So, of course, if you take the aortic stenosis, the severe aortic stenosis patients, right now, in a country like the United States, while it's the most advanced field, it's also still underpenetrated. So probably about 15%, 20%. Penetration globally, it's pretty low. If you take now the mitral regurgitation, whether it's primary or secondary mitral regurgitation, the market penetration is around, it's probably less than 2%. So we have millions of patients there, and very few of them got access to these treatment options. Tricuspid regurgitation, it's a brand new field. It's a brand new therapy. We just got the first of its kind minimally invasive transcatheter edge-to-edge device. So our TriClip device approved last April. So we have to develop and establish a new therapy. So there is still a lot of work to be done, and we have barely, I would say, penetrated these different markets.
I will take a quick break from this conversation to bring back our sponsor, Confluent Medical. I'm here with Tom Ditter. He is Senior Director of Product Development at Confluent Medical. Tom, Nitinol is growing in popularity. We're seeing more and more OEMs are turning to it. This alloy has shape memory. It has super elastic properties. Can you explain how Confluent sets itself apart from other Nitinol suppliers?
Well, Confluent has over 30 years of experience in the design and processing of Nitinol. But beyond that expertise, Confluent identified a Nitinol supply chain gap. They invested over $100 million across the supply chain. Most recently, they just made an investment of over $50 million in additional melt and conversion capacity, becoming the fulfillment partner for one of the largest melt suppliers in the industry.
So, Tom, we're hearing so much about Nitinol's super elastic and shape memory properties. It makes it an ideal alloy, specifically within the neurovascular space. Can you speak to how Confluent's expertise is able to meet the growing demands for OEMs in the neurovascular market?
Yes, for neurovascular applications, durability is a major consideration, and Confluent Medical has invested heavily in the development and processing of high-purity alloys for increased durability and fatigue resistance. Our material SE508 ELI is one of the highest purity materials available and ideal for high cycle fatigue applications, as found in neurovascular devices. Additionally, Confluent specializes in high precision polymer tubing, such as FilmCast PTFE. This makes us unique in the neurovascular space in that we can offer PTFE with thinner walls and larger diameters, making it ideal for large diameter aspiration catheters.
So, Tom, that's super interesting about the neurovascular space. So what does the future look like for Nitinol in the neurovascular device market?
The demand for minimally invasive procedures is growing, so we can expect to see Nitinol as a key alloy for these devices. Future applications such as neurovascular devices will need to have a smaller profile with an emphasis on durability. Additionally, high-purity Nitinol is needed to address high-fatigue applications to prevent fracture and improve longevity for patients.
Well, this has been really entertaining and insightful, Tom. Thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you, Tom. Glad to be with you.
And thanks to Confluent Medical for sponsoring this episode. If you'd like to find out more about Confluent Medical, go to confluentmedical.com or, interestingly enough, nitinol.com. So where does Abbott stand today in its portfolio, structural heart portfolio, and I'd love to understand where you see it moving in the future, if you're going to be focusing in one part of the heart versus the other.
Yeah. So, first of all, the first thing I would say is that Abbott comes with the most comprehensive structural heart portfolio in the industry. And the big thing also I learned when I joined Abbott is the huge contribution that we've got in this structural heart industry. So we have pioneered innovative medical devices that address clinical unmet needs for people of all ages. I mean, really, if you think about the spectrum, it's big, like from infants to people over 90 years old or even older than 100 years old. And these patients coming with very complex heart issues, like damaged heart valves, but also structural heart defects. And the first thing that we did, if you think about Abbott and where we come from, so we have first pioneered the first transcatheter therapy for mitral regurgitation. And for the last 20 years, this team at Abbott, they've done the most extraordinary job to develop, to shape or establish a brand new therapy with our technology called MitraClip. And we have touched now more than 200,000 lives. So this is how everything started. And based on that, over time, we've been able to build a portfolio. And so far, and as of today, we have this most comprehensive portfolio. So if you think about today or this year, I think that there are two important highlights as it comes to our portfolio and our portfolio of solutions. The first one, as I mentioned, was the TriClip FDA approval in the United States to treat tricuspid regurgitation. That was a huge milestone for the industry, with the very first of its kind, so a transcatheter edge-to-edge repair technology, which was designed to treat leaky tricuspid valves. And we received a strong vote from an independent panel of physicians to get that approved. And so far, if you think about tricuspid regurgitation and our TriClip technology, we've been able to transform the lives of more than 10,000 patients. So wow. That was this is a really big milestone. And keep in mind as well that these patients, prior to the TriClip approval, they were left with very limited options. So that's this year, to me, one big, big accomplishment for Abbott Structural Heart. The second thing I would say, which is key to our Structural Heart business, is our transcatheter aortic valve intervention franchise. I've got to work very closely with the team since I joined Abbott, and I've been very impressed by our team and the ability to understand that, yes, the bar is set high, but what is important for us is to think outside of the box. It's really important that we keep innovating in this space so that we can come up with a technology or future product iterations which will make a meaningful difference. And I love the way how this team has been really, really working hard to innovate, to design some new technologies. And I will be excited, hopefully, to share with you more information in the months and years to come about that. But that's been very important to us. So if you think about, and back to your second question, so where do I want to take our structural heart business? My one objective and the vision I have, it's quite simple. I just want to make a meaningful difference. And in fact, this is, as I said, the reason why I got into the healthcare space in the first place. So I simply want to help people. And at Abbott, and for me as well, personally, what this means is that we want to be innovation driven, as I said. So innovation, it's not me too. And I don't want to follow the path that others have built before, but I want to learn from that instead and keep listening, keep challenging ourselves, identifying these unmet needs so that we can design some of these unique and disruptive products to help many more patients and to provide some unique solutions, obviously, to the physicians with whom we partner. So that's really the key area. That's number one, innovation. No, me too. Number two, I mean, on one end, it's great to innovate, but on the other end, I think that you want to make sure that whatever we do, it's done in the safe and very effective way. We want to make sure that we keep, you know, focusing on making these technologies easier and easier to use. When it's easier, it means that this is also an opportunity to drive more reproducible outcomes from one institution to another. So can we standardize a lot more? Can we even democratize some of these interventions so that if I'm a patient and I get to be treated in one institution who cannot treat more than maybe, let's say, 20, you know, TAVI procedures a year, you will never have the same experience than one institution who get to treat, you know, hundreds of TAVI procedures a year. So how can we have a role here to play so that we can make sure that a patient, no matter where she or she lives, will get the same type of outcomes? And that's also part of the vision here that we have and I have for our structural heart business.
That's interesting. You kind of raised two points that I want to dive into a little more deeply. Number one, sort of the democratization of the processes. To me, I hear new technologies, I hear AI, I hear surgical robotics, and we don't need to necessarily get too deep down that rabbit hole. But do you see those types of technologies that have not been core to structural heart? What kind of role do you see those playing in the future?
I strongly believe that this is going to play a big role. And I won't share too much at this stage.
You can if you'd like, but I understand.
I know. But I'm with you. I'm 100% with you. And that's the way I think this is the new frontier for our structural heart field. And this is what we have to explore now so that we can make this happen.
And the second area you kind of touched upon was proving clinical efficacy. So I hear clinical trials. Historically, trials, in particular, I think for structural heart, have really focused on one population, men. What sort of efforts are you undertaking to not only broaden the genders involved in clinical trials, but also the ethnicities of the patients?
Yeah, I think this is a major issue, and as a woman, I can only be I would say passionate about this very specific topic. So we have, this is also a responsibility that we have as industry leaders to be more intentional as it comes to be more provide and ensure that we do more research on the female population. That's number one. But also I would like to see more female investigators also and leaders in the space. So it's on one end, it's really about the patients, but also on the other end, it's also about the scientific community. And this is where I strongly believe that we have a role to play. And it's a matter of being very intentional about the way how we design our study protocols. That's one. And also the decisions that we make as it comes to, you know, identify our principal investigators, or steering committee, and as we go through our site selection process.
And without creating any turf wars between surgeons and interventionalists, do you see the future of this field going completely one way or the other, interventional versus surgery? Will it continue to be a mix of both? What does this look like?
So what we are seeing today is that this is clearly a mix of both. This is a heart team effort, so it's not one or the other. And what we do, structural heart Abbott, it's not only transcatheter, but it's also cardiac surgery. So we have a nice balance between the two. And in my view is that this is going to stay like this for for a long time. I don't expect or foresee any big change, because this is what makes the difference at the end. It's this hard team effort and contribution so that they can identify what's the best treatment option for their patients.
Great. And last question, sort of going back to your origins, I believe you said your sick relative, I believe it was your mom, who had heart issues. I'm not sure if she's still with us or not, but would she have benefited from some of the technologies you're working on now? Did she have a completely different condition? I'm just curious how personal has this is this mission for you?
Yeah, this is a different condition. So it's not in structural heart. She's still alive and she got access to a treatment. She was part of a clinical study a long time ago, and she could benefit from it. So she's doing fine now.
How does that experience color your work every day? You must feel the imprint on everything you do.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And this is I would tell you that the first thing that I'm going to think about, it's when we think about innovation, when we think about clinical research, when we think about anything, literally anything that I do, it's intended as like I would treat somebody from my family, like my mom or anybody else. It's real. It's real. And I want to make sure that we make all these things right. It's at the very end, you know, we are talking about patients and ensuring that they not only have the access to the most disruptive technologies, but it needs to be super safe, and quality comes first. And that's something for which I would never, never trade off anything. I mean, this is priority number one.
Well, you've clearly got your mission and found your home in medtech. I'm really grateful for you to share that you shared your story and for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, that is a wrap. Thanks so much to Confluent Medical for sponsoring this episode of Abbott Talks. Thanks, of course, to Sandra Lassenfrantz for joining us on this episode and to you for listening. We'd love to have you receive future episodes of Abbott Talks and our other great podcasts. To do that, you need to subscribe to the Device Talks Podcast Network on any major podcast player. So just push follow or subscribe and you won't miss a future episode. While you're there, if you give us a ranking of some kind, preferably a good one and a solid review that will boost my ego, we would appreciate it. And also, please share this on social media. Share it on LinkedIn. And when you do, please connect with me, Tom Salemi at Device Talks, our managing editor, Kayleen Brown, who manages and leads the Device Talks podcast network. You can find her on LinkedIn as well. And, of course, connect to Device Talks. All right, folks. Thanks again for listening to this episode of the Abbott Talks podcast. We'll get working on another one and send it out to you real soon. Take care, everybody.